This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Living free.
Thanks to Resident Frequency Radio for another great show, playing tracks and chatting with local artists. Welcome to Living Free, a one-hour show in which we highlight one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drugs, alcohol, gambling and food addictions. Our guests share their recovery story and highlight that shared experience saves lives. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM radio or 3CR Digital, or maybe even streaming on 3cr.org.au. My name's Michael. Today we've asked our guest, Jason, to share their experience of recovery from gambling addiction with the help of Gamblers Anonymous. But before we do that, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and acknowledge that material and spiritual connection of the Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them and sovereignty was never ceded. Also, please note that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness or self-harm and family violence. So please practice self-care and care of others whilst listening. Welcome, Jason. It's great to have you in the studio today.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. We like to start the show by asking our guests to tell us a little bit about their upbringing or their childhood. So what was it like growing up as Jason?
So I'm a 70s baby of one of three boys. So we grew up in the 70s, pretty easygoing, lived in Melbourne all our life. We did move to Bendigo for a little while, which was fun, and lived out of a caravan. That probably wasn't so fun. Then we moved back to Footscray, where we were building a house in the northern suburbs, so we were just living at my nana's for a while, while that was getting built, and then we moved into that house in 1974, which, that's so long ago, I feel old.
Yep.
And that was good. A brand new house in Keeler Park. It was a really nice area. So we grew up with the two boys, played football. We really didn't do just rat bag boys, you know, the brothers growing up. We did have some fighting, but over and all, we just had a good upbringing, to be honest. So my mum and dad were pretty good. They let us do pretty much whatever we wanted to, actually. So,
And so, and did you have, we're here to talk about your gambling problem. Did you have any experience with gambling in your family before you?
Not really. No, my gambling didn't start till a bit later. So I didn't even go near any. My poison was poker machines, to be honest, and not horse racing, really. My grandfather used to like horses and stuff, but I used to listen to them, really, but it didn't really affect me that much. But not really anything back in the early days. It was just more, we used to play footy and cricket and just hang out with friends, and my gambling started quite a bit later in life, actually.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, so we might sort of cut to that. So if you've got, finished school? Did you go to...
I did finish year 10 at school, and then I kind of dropped out and got a job working with my mum and dad's company in Footscray. Did that for a few years, and then I decided to get an apprenticeship in French polishing, which I did complete that at trade school in Paran, which was good. That was a good job. You earned a lot of money.
I say it's a niche industry.
It is a niche industry, and people don't appreciate that sort of work nowadays because it's really, spray painting is more considered a cheaper option, but French polishing is all done by hand.
Yeah.
And I did that whole apprenticeship for over 4 years. It was quite intense, but it was good that I got to complete that after finishing school.
Okay. And so what did what was your life looking like as you moved into starting to gamble? How old were you?
Well, I didn't really gamble much until maybe 20. Probably about 20, 26. I did some gambling here and there, but it wasn't really, not that it's not a problem, but I didn't really go often enough. I'd go probably once every 6 months or probably less than that.
In the early 2000s.
Yeah, and it was not much. But then, unfortunately, it just went into high gear when my wife got sick. And
when was that? What year was that?
My wife, unfortunately, got leukemia 10 days before our wedding, which was insane. Like, that was just a an emotional roller coaster, just spun us out, and we were not expecting that at all. And yeah, unfortunately, look, after 4.5 years of fighting, she did pass away, and then my life just went into a spin. It was just...
How old were you?
I was 36 when my first wife passed away, and I thought, I don't know how to handle this. I don't know what to do. We built a house to get her in, and unfortunately, she never got to see that house.
Yep.
It was finished about 6 weeks after she died, and it was just a constant reminder. And then, so I thought, well, I need to kind of deal with the grief. So I thought I'd just go and instantly have a few, I used to call them one-arm bandits, but now they're all push-button machines now.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is good. It can make the grief easier, so I can just blot it out and kind of just deal with it that way.
Yep.
And it was good for a while, but then unfortunately the worst thing happened to me. I won this huge jackpot at the venue and thought, this is easy.
Yep.
I'm going to keep going back. And then I started losing money. Then I chased my losses.
And so what does it feel like to win? What's the feeling that comes when you have a, like, I guess you, it, you know, you invest, you say it's an investment almost, so you're putting it in there, you've invested your time and your energy to be there. And so what's the feeling like when you have a payoff?
Well, I was actually shocked when I first saw it, because there was someone sitting next to me and this feature come up, and then the whole screen was filled with something. I can't remember even know what they were now. And then the alarm bells went off. I thought, oh, my God, this is crazy good. Like, I've won so much money, and I was so excited at the time because it was, like, such a bad time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
This was something good, I thought, back then.
Yeah.
And then back then you get paid by a check over a certain amount of money. So I saw the money on the check. Oh, my gosh, I cashed this. I'll go back again because this is easy. And then you started realizing it's not easy. You're always chasing your losses.
Yeah.
And then I lost money, and then I lost money, and then I lost money. And then before you know it, you're just poisoned, unfortunately. Your brain is poisoned.
Yep.
And you just go back lots and lots of days and keep chasing the losses until in the end, you don't know right from wrong. You just spent so many hours there, and just the lights at these venues. I was a sucker for the pokies, unfortunately. They were just there so many times.
Did you have other people in your life at the time that you know, were relying on you? You said your wife had passed away, but did you have other people that you...
Well, no, it was just me. I was living with my mother-in-law at the time, so she didn't even know. I just went to work, so it was just me. I had a little dog that we got for when my wife was sick. In fact, we named her Dobby after the Harry Potter, and she saved me in a way, because I used to come home every night. At least that was one good thing I had. But then other than that, I just do what I want and go where I want and just spend what I want. There was just no accountability, and I just lost everything, really.
Yeah. So what about your relationship with your siblings, with your brothers and your parents at that stage?
Well, one of my brothers lived near me at the time, so he was a bit of a help for me, but my other brother lived a bit further away. But they were all, when my wife first passed away, everyone was supportive, but then after time, that dissipates a little. Not that they don't love you or don't care about you, but you have to go through your own battles.
Yep.
And I kept it all to myself, and it was easy for me to just go and just gamble and just get the sort of like the injection of a hit that I needed from these places. And it went on for a long time.
Yeah.
It was bad.
So you weren't sharing the what was happening with the gambling with your family? Like, did other people know about it?
No, I don't think many people do know about it. Look, people now know more about it now, but there's probably still, to this day, a lot of my family won't know about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really am grateful for where I am now, but it's come a long way.
Yeah, so I guess there's a lot of shame that's attached to our addictions.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we're doing stuff that, I don't know if you can explain it, but that idea when we were talking about it before the show, but I know the consequences of what I'm going to do. I know that the history shows me that that I'm going to walk into this place and I'm about to blow some money that I might not have, or I might be stealing to get. Or so, how did you fund your gambling?
Well, I just basically spent my wages and just got secret credit cards and just put them to the hilt. And when you're finding you've got three cards, paying one off after the other and just chasing your losses, you become into a whirlwind and you just don't know. And then you got so many cards on the go. How do you repay them all back when they're at the maximum? So then you just start betting bigger and try to win more money to try to pay those off. But it, in the end, it's just demoralizing because you just don't know what to do. You're really scary time.
Yeah. Did you try to stop? Did you try to manage it or try to cut back? Or did you set yourself some routines in your day where you go, actually, so today I'm not going to do this?
Well, I did do that because I drove and I still drive for a living. So it was really hard to just manage that initially. But there was a lot of times where I did have a lot of abstinence of gambling. But ultimately, I just went back to it because I just wasn't ready to stop. Michael, this is the thing. And I just kept going and going until... Obviously, a lot of things have happened since then, but I did put things in place to try to, I didn't exclude myself from these venues, but I just try to be strong and say, don't need to go in there anymore. You're not, mm-hmm. you don't need it.
And what happened then?
It didn't work.
I absolutely understand
it didn't work. And it was, it didn't work. It just, for a couple of days, yeah, but I just kept going back and back and back. Yeah.
That's really demoralising is when we're acting against our own will. We've set ourselves a target and we go, well, I'm not going to do that today, and there I am doing it. And so once you start, like, is there any way to pull up, or what happens? What makes you pull up once you start?
Well, I'm a very compulsive person, so with me, it'll just stop when there's just no money left, unfortunately. So I won't pull up. So if I have a certain amount of money in there. Or cards. Sometimes I used to leave my cards out of the venue, so I'm not tempted to spend more than what I've got there. But you can just go out to the car and or do whatever and grab that anyway. So it was kind of like a bit of a hindrance for me. But you could easily do that and grab it. So just when the money was gone, that was when I would just stop then because there's nothing left.
And so what would happen then? So you've got no money left and you've probably still got bills to pay for the rest of the week and you've got other bits and pieces.
Scary. So then you start wanting, do you go into the stealing or like getting another card? Then in one time I was so desperate I actually rang a bank and got a personal loan to just pay off those cards. And that's what I did that. But then what happened then? I just used the cards again to pay for my gambling. So that was my slush fund.
Yeah.
It was just poisonous, Michael. Oh my gosh. It was when I think about what I used to do to gamble.
Yeah.
It was just the sneaking and the lying and the stealing and the dishonesty and gave me a lot of shame.
Mm.
And it still does impact me quite a bit in my life because I remember the pain in people's eyes when you do wrong by them and you do all these secret things and people are shocked with, you know, what you've done and people don't understand what you've been through. And it is a scary time because you feel alone.
Absolutely. The loneliness of the addict is amazing because I can't talk to anybody else about what I'm doing because it's a secret and I can't share it with anybody, but it actually dominates my life. It's like the thing that takes over my whole life and there's no one else to talk to about it. So it sits in my own head. I just think about it. I think about it and think about it. I can't sleep. I can't put my head on the pillow at night and comfortably sleep. It dominates every aspect of my life and no one else can see it.
No, and the sleeping was a big problem for me because in the GA book, it's where they've helped me too, there's a part where it says people go through terrifying experiences. That part always gets me really emotional because I know a lot of people go through those terrifying experiences and I know I have.
Mm.
And it's scary time to know that, is there not a way out here? Like, what is the rock bottom for people? So everyone's rock bottom will be different, but then the terrifying experiences that you go through as a gambler is just horrible. Like, I've lost friends, I've done damage to people in my family and how the scars can heal, the wounds can heal, but the scars are always going to be there.
Yeah.
Did
it stop you from showing up at, I know my experience with, say, alcohol is that I would make commitments to be somewhere, but then if alcohol got in the way, I just wouldn't be there. Did you have that sort of experience where you gambled instead of keeping a commitment to other people?
Oh, absolutely. It's like there was sometimes when, this is the second time when I used to gamble, I would do it during working hours and my phone would be left in the car, so I would be having to do things, and I would deliberately need to go to this venue so I can get my fix, and neglect what my normal role was. And that's not a normal way of living and thinking. You can't do that. And they're the things that you really have to have a character change about, because that is a huge thing when you it impacts your normal everyday life.
Yeah, when you know it's happening, then it makes us, what was our self, you know, we have poor self-esteem because of the fact that I know I'm not doing the right thing and there I am doing it again. So did you have any experiences of stopping along the way? You know, have you had periods where you've gone, been caught and then gone, bang, okay, I'm going to make a decision, I'm not going to do this anymore?
There was some abstinence, like the first time when this happened, my work had actually, as I discussed, they've helped me with pay off the one of the cards, which was just phenomenal. So after that time, I was on the up and up and everything was looking good, and I didn't...
So you got caught?
I got caught, and then my boss said that he would help me out, but as long as my wife knew about this, this is my second wife. And so we were all on board with that, and he paid off my debt, and I was allowed to pay it back through my wages over a period of time, which was just phenomenal because I never expected that, and I felt grateful at the time because that allowed me to not, I wasn't gambling at that stage, and it gave me a truce and a pressure reliever that you can get on with your life and do a normal way of life again and not having to worry about gambling.
But, yep.
So that was probably about 6 months of time, which felt good. But then, unfortunately, I went back for some more rounds.
Yep.
Scarily, the second time was probably worse because my wife was not expecting this the second time. And that was when the huge credit cards, I had three cards then, and I went through and they were horrendous amounts. So I don't want to say on radio exact because it's triggering for people and I don't like some of those things, but they were well over five figures each one of them, so it's crazy amount of, and you work it out if you have three cards, Michael, that are at the hilt, how are you going to pay it off with an allowance that you have? It just doesn't work. So
so what was the event that brought you to your knees where you went, actually I absolutely can't do this anymore?
Well, that was probably the third time when I had to, when I did something wrong at work. I think that was the worst time when I thought everything's all over, because that was round three at that stage, and I thought my life's over, and I literally considered driving the car off the Great Ocean Road at that stage. I was so desperate. I didn't know if there was a way in or out, and it was just I don't know why, as I think I told you, that I heard a song on the radio and it stopped me from doing it. But I could nearly have drove the car off the Great Ocean Road, and it was nearly going to be easier to do that than feel all this pain, and not, that was my rock bottom, I think. And then,
but that was that. I'm going back to a conversation that hasn't happened on air, but that wasn't happening while you were gambling. That was
no.
So what was the thing that stopped you gambling? Like, what was the thing that you went, actually, I can't gamble anymore?
Well, I think it was just the money side of it, going through all these things about money. Look, it's hard to put a figure on it exactly, but for me, I don't want to go back to the pain and the misery of how you feel when you're gambling, because it just treated me like poison. So, enough is enough, Michael. How many times can you belt yourself up and lie and steal and cheat and not be a good person? After three times, I felt like I was useless, so I thought, I've got to stop this. After three times of getting caught gambling, how many times do you want to do this? So That was when I said to myself, I need to make some changes in myself to make this work. And that's when I got help from work and other things to help make that happen.
So that's around about 2019?
Yes, correct, yeah.
Okay, well, that's a good place to stop. We'll play some music, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what it looked like when you first stopped gambling. And you're listening to Living Free even, on 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM radio, 3CR Digital, or streaming on 3cr.org.au. If you'd like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform, or just search for 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us by phone or email. Today I'm talking with Jason about his recovery from gambling through with the help of Gamblers Anonymous. And before the break, we talked about the thing that brought you to your knee, the last, you know, the shame and the guilt that came with spending so much money and losing so much money. And you made a decision in 2019 that you weren't going to gamble. And what happened from there? What was the thing that, you know, what did it look like when you stopped gambling? What happened?
Well, after you make the decision to stop gambling, you have to make character changes. And I finally decided, after making those decisions, you have to be honest with yourself and your whole well-being of yourself and your family. Otherwise, you really get into a desperate situation. I don't even want to get to that stage. And unfortunately, I did get to that stage. And that's a big problem, because then didn't want to live, to be honest. Yeah, it was a scary time.
So what led to that? Was it something going on inside you? Did your character not change, or did you end up acting in ways that made you feel bad about yourself?
No, it didn't change properly. So in 2019, when I did start that new job, because I'd been at a company for a long time, and then I left in 2019 and started a new job, and that was right before COVID, and I didn't accept the changes of the new old job to the new job, so I didn't learn any lessons, Michael, so I just didn't make any changes at all. So that's when I got caught and found that I needed to make these character changes. Unfortunately for me, that was the time when I was going to drive the car off, because just before then I didn't want to live anymore, because I had all these extra money and all I did was waste it all. And then that's the second time that I'd been caught, and that's when I was going to get the car, drive to the Great Ocean Road and drive off the cliff and just end everything, because it's easier.
Yeah.
It's just easier.
But it's amazing how thinking will give us that thought that, you know, I've got a life and life isn't worth living even when I'm not playing out in my addiction.
And I have a wife and two kids, so it's a scary thing to think that not even a family can stop you. And luckily, a song come on the radio, Michael, and I just turned the car around, went to Werribee South, took my shoes and socks off, and sat on the beach for 2 hours on the edge of the beach for 2 hours, and found a way to not do something stupid. And then I went back home and realized life's too short to do stupid things like this. I went back home. My wife was wondering where I was, and we had a good conversation when I got home. But I was very grateful that I didn't make those stupid decisions. Where would my family be now if I'd just done that? It was crazy times. Yeah. It was.
Don't like to be flippant about it, but, you know, suicide is a relapse. Mm. You know, like, it's a very permanent relapse, and we have the same thing in you know, it's a common thing actually in other with people with addictions, is the fact that I can't live with my addiction, but also I can't live when I'm not doing the addiction because I haven't got a way of living that works. And so I'm left with these choices, and then I narrow down my choices to, actually, do I want to live or do I want to die? And we're very all or nothing people, aren't we? Like there's two way extremes there, and I'm going to choose one or the other rather than anything that's in between. So
well,
you had a moment of clarity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a very compulsive person in nature with everything anyway. So, and when I started the new job in 2019, well, it was near the end of the year. So in 2020, we got hit by COVID. So that was the worst thing that happened for me, and really a lot of people too, because you were just locked down, and it was just awful. We got locked up like animals for like 3 or 4 years. And then I only lasted at this job for about 18 months, unfortunately. Just many things happened. Mm-hmm. Then I went back to the company that I'm working at now, which was a kind of a good thing. But then round three happened. And this is the turning point for me about GA, what happened. Yeah. So I started back at my company that I'm now in 2021.
Yep.
And it was funny, because when I gave notice at that work, I wasn't allowed to start for about 4 weeks.
Yep.
But I wasn't gambling then, but I had so much freedom to not have to worry about money or work or no computer, no phone. I just had 4 weeks of time off before I started back here. And it did me a good thing. It really did, because it made me have a bit of a reset, But unfortunately, I still, there was one third time that it made me see the light, which was, which we can discuss as well. But 2021 is when I finally decided to do that. And then, yeah, and I've been still there to this day now. So, yeah.
And so what's the thing that drove you to GA?
So, well, in March last year, this is where I found GA last year in March. So just before March, I'd misappropriated some funds from my work because I was on a bit of a tight allowance and I was getting a bit bitter and anxious about it. So I didn't explain to my wife this was going on. I just thought I'd keep it inside and just do all this and just suck it up because I felt a bit guilty about doing the things I did in the past and all the lies and the secrets.
Mm-hmm.
So then it come to a head and where I did take that money from the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And then my boss had caught me and then I got a letter I had to show to my wife, and then it was all went to a bowl of custard. So I could have been dismissed instantly from that workplace.
Yep.
And I sat in there and they said, do you realize how much trouble you're in? This is serious misconduct. I could fire you on the spot. And then I realized, well, my life's now over for sure now because I've lied again to my wife for the third time. How many times can your wife forgive you? Like, you're just a hopeless, you're a loser. How can you keep lying and think that you want any respect when you don't even show any respect back?
Yep.
But Michael, to be honest, the best thing my work did is they let me come to GA. So even though I wasn't putting money in the pokies, I still was not thinking money properly. So they said, how about you go to a GA meeting? Even though you're not putting money in the pokies, it might help you.
Yep.
So that's how I got introduced. So I went onto the website, found the nearest centre to me, which is Point Cook.
Yep.
So I decided to go there sometime in March last year to my first meeting. It was the scariest thing I've ever experienced in my life as it being rawness, because I went in there and I was just an emotional ball of tears the whole night. I just sat there, listened to people talk, and there were people like me. I knew I wasn't the only one going through this insidious disease, and realized that, oh my gosh, I can, maybe this, there is hope for me here to respect and understand how money works.
Yep.
Because after that first meeting, I realized at the time, you can't do the minimum of chips with a sprinkle of gravy and think that that's going to work. You've got to be all in. And it's crazy how that meeting, when you're sitting in that room in Point Cook, I don't know what it is. The energy for me when I go there, I feel happy inside.
Yeah.
If I think back what happened in 2006 with my wife passing away and how I've lied and cheated, and then when I sit in this GA meeting on a Thursday night, the relief and pride I feel when I'm in there is crazy, Michael. I just don't understand what it is, but it feels so right and so good for me. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, and now in our language, I'd say God was in the room. And so there's definitely a feeling, isn't there, when everybody's got the same problem.
Oh,
but there's also a solution on offer, because it's the problem drives us into the room, and it's a really small door the first time we walk in there, and we go, oh, hell. But then we get this identification by listening to other people who aren't talking about my addiction, they're talking about their addiction, and all I'm doing is sitting there nodding my head and nodding my head and nodding my head, and I go, oh my God, I'm just like somebody else. I'm not so alone.
No, it's true, and you do get a lot out of other people's shares as well. Like when I first went to that meeting, Michael, in 18 months ago, I could barely afford to buy a cheeseburger meal, and now I can honestly and happily say to you that I actually chair the meetings on a Thursday night at a Point Cook, and I share it with another member. But it's absolutely incredible that thinking then and now, I would have never have thought that I'd fly to the moon and host and chair a meeting in front of other people. In fact, there's a meeting on tonight, so I will be attending that as well. So I love them. They really make me feel good inside, and they've helped me in a way nothing else did.
Yeah, we get this opportunity to be useful, and which I didn't know that I was suffering from a lack of usefulness until I actually show up and other people give me an opportunity to do it, and they trust me, and they trust, and they rely on me, and all of a sudden I'm reliable, and they trust me, and I'm trustworthy, and that's the nature of the 12-step fellowships, is that they give me opportunities to change my character by trusting me.
Yeah, and there's a note that is on the meeting on Thursday nights, is what you see here, what you hear, when you leave here, let it stay here.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, because then you can show, be totally raw and honest, because you know it's going to be totally anonymous and no one's going to judge you because they've been through similar terrifying experiences. One part in the book I told you that you go through terrifying experiences, and not just GAANA, everyone goes through terrifying experiences. And I've really appreciated what GA have done, and I just want to help give back too. And because listening to people's stories and sharing my stories too, it helps me in my recovery a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that the spirit of anonymity is the whole driving force about the fact that I can go there and hey, I can say whatever name I like. I could be there and say I'm Michael, but I could go there and say I'm David, and no one's going to question it. It really makes no difference. They don't care about my past. They're not going to judge me on the basis of my income, and you know, because the nature of addiction is that it's not picking out the left-handers, and it's picking out the people like, you know, that have that sort of job or that job or this or do this, or their parents are not parents or whatever. It's actually, addiction can hit anybody, and when I walk into a room of people come from really different backgrounds, and I don't feel so alone, but I also know that my anonymity is going to be protected. You know, as I said, if what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here.
Yeah, no, it's a really big thing that we have there. And as you always know that you, when you go to these meetings, that you can always know that you're going to be looked after there. And one thing I've learned with GA has taught me as well is to be kind to myself, because I was never like that to myself. When, as a gambler, you're always self-sabotaging, and you just didn't care in the end about wins, Michael. It was just, I didn't give a shit about that. It was always about my slush fund, what I could do, what selfishness I can do. But you don't feel like that when you're not gambling. I don't have to worry about the secrets and the lies, and I can honestly say that I don't even care about the gambling anymore. Like, and I don't want to be complacent, because the complacency is what got me to this bad position anyway.
Yep.
So the GA keeps me from that, and it feels good being in the meetings. So I'm going to keep going to them as long as I can, because they're giving me something, and I want to help give them something. And if I can share a meeting or come on the radio and show and tell my story of how the pain was for me, if it can help one person, Michael, well, then it's a good thing.
Absolutely. We'll come back after a break, and we'll talk about you know, a little bit more about what life's like now. Welcome back. You're listening to 3CR Living Free, 8:55 on the AM dial, or digital radio, or live streaming. The radiothon is coming up. Let's see. 3CR turns 50 years old this year, and we're going to ask you to support the station that supports local voices, so you can hear local and act local. Become a donor and support your community. Your community needs support more than ever. You know, it's a non-profit organisation that resists the influence of government and corporate agendas. Our voice is an independent one. To maintain this ideal, we rely on the support of our listeners. So support 3CR by donating during the radiothon, and we would encourage all the people. We want to thank the people last year that donated through this show. We had a budget, and I said this last week, we had a budget last year of the budget was $2,000, and we flew past it, which I now will blame the listeners and the subscribers to this show for now having raised our budget for this year, and then the target is much higher, and we've loved to have you come and support us in the show on the 11th of June. But you can donate at any other time. We'll have a funding page up on the website in the next couple of days. And or you can contact the station on 94198377 during business hours, or you can go online. So we encourage you to help the station keep going. It's a just really important way to get unheard voices in the public arena. So today we're talking with about gambling, and we're speaking to Jason about his recovery through Gamblers Anonymous. So you've joined Gamblers Anonymous, and you're gambling free. So what does life look like now? What are you enjoying about life?
Well, I'm enjoying not having to worry about sneaking behind and not having to be lying to people and having my wife say to me, "I love you, but I can't trust you." That was the killer for me. That really hurt. Cut deep, the look on my wife's face when she was saying that, and then how it feels for her, then how it felt for me, and as a big picture, like that's it, because I can't do this anymore. This was said after the third time, and And now, after making those decisions and being in GA and being gambling free for such a long time, and then being in this fellowship now since March last year, so now it's been nearly 15 or 16 months in the GA group and fellowship, it's just nothing but been amazing for me, because I love going there every time I can. I learnt a lot. And my wife's even made comment about the changes in me. Like, I'm not perfect. I'm always going to be a recovering gambling addict.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I'm doing the right thing now with not gambling, and I'm trying to be a good person. And I now know that I am a good person.
Yeah.
And it's these character changes that I've learnt from the GA meetings and making these decisions inside your brain that you need to do the right things. And they're happening, so it's good.
Yeah, and the people around us are watching, and we're just talking off air about the fact that through my addiction, I train the people around me to act in a way that doesn't sit comfortably for them. Mm. And so I make them not trust me because I'm not trustworthy, and I make them not rely on me because I'm unreliable, and they love me, and so they would like to rely on me and they'd like to trust me, and they can't. And so they feel so uncomfortable, and it takes a bit of time to rebuild that trust. And so how's that going with you in your relationships now?
The trust is getting better now. My wife has mentioned a few things to me, which is good, and the kids are interactive more, and I stole some of their money too, to be honest. So when you steal money from your family, it's everyone's money.
Yeah.
So look, we're getting along good now. So I've got teenage kids, because they can be hard work at the best of times. But look, all in all, without having the gambling, and everyone's got their own troubles here and there. But look, I can honestly say the gamble free does make a big difference. And I'm just going to keep continuing to go and make these character changes and try to be a better person, because that's the ultimate goal, really. And I look forward to doing things in life now. Back in the past, I have a bucket list where I'd love to take my wife to Italy on a gondola ride. Yeah. That'd be an all-time thing that I'd love to do. But if I thought about those things when I was gambling, that'd be a picture of it in a magazine. That's all you'd be doing. There'd be no chance of that happening. So maybe one day, but these things, because I'm looking forward to these things now, I just wish I didn't put our family through these things, but they're the past now, and I'm going to make changes now to have better things happen in our lives. So that's what I want to do. So
at the meetings, you're getting newcomers, new people coming in the door.
Yep.
And we were talking again before the show started about the you were lucky in some ways that you were playing pokies sitting in a venue, whereas gamblers, there's just vastly different types of gambling. Those people can hide in their bedrooms and be stuck on their phone and losing everything they own and everything their family owns whilst they're just sitting in a bedroom on a phone is just scary, isn't it?
Well, it is, because the online wasn't as big when I first started gambling, but online now is just nuts. You could just sit in your room and just gamble your whole life away, and no one will ever see you. Like, that's a scary thing. If I was gambling now, I'd be probably in a worse position where I'd have to go out to the venues when I was gambling.
Yeah.
But now it's just, you just pick up your phone, Michael, and just push buttons and all your money's gone.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's crazy. So that is a terrifying thing, just thinking about that. So how these people go through these things. And I hear them in the meeting every week. You have new members saying these sort of things, and I can feel the pain in their voice.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? That's the reason that keeps getting us back there to the meetings, is that we need to be the example, that to sit there and go, actually, as they're sitting there listening to our stories and nodding their heads and going, oh, I'm powerless over this. You know, I was gambling when I really didn't want to be gambling, or I was doing behaviours that I really didn't want to do against my own will, that they're not alone when they walk in and they hear those stories from the people who haven't done it for a while, because that's incumbent on us to show up as the example.
Oh, that's true. Exactly right. And when you do hear these stories, it does remind you, and I say this in the GA meetings quite a few Thursday nights, I never want to go back to those painful experiences again. And when I hear these stories of people recovering and when they got one day up or 2 days up, or sometimes it's even 0 days up, you feel for them, because at least, though, from an hour, Michael, they're not gambling.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing.
Yeah. It's a program of you know, what's the word? It's attraction, not promotion.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are the walking examples of people who are in recovery. And so it's important that we show up and give them a good example of what that looks like, and that we, you know, we're not sitting there in the meetings and sounding all good and then going home and kicking the cat, or you know, going home and being, you know, being rude and everything else, or being abusive to our families, because we're living this life that we've made a decision to live differently. And and it's important that we can say that there is hope. There's, you know, that there is hope, because that position of hopelessness is just a terrible place to be in. That you were talking about lying on the beach and making this decision that actually I want to live, and that's the rock bottom. And and that's exactly right. You're in this position of hopelessness, but out of that decision, you've got hope now.
That's exactly right. And that I'll be forever grateful for finding the GA, even though I did find it later in life. But the meetings, there's a saying we have in the meetings: meetings make it.
Yeah.
And even though I go to a Thursday night meeting, those meetings have just helped so many people. GA has helped me in so many ways, and I never would have thought when I first went to the one meeting over a year ago that, yeah, okay, this is going to be a life changer. I learned pretty quickly that this is not going to be a 2 or 3 week thing, and I'm going to go there for as long as I can, God willing, and I'll just attend as many meetings as possible, because they keep you from being complacent. That's the biggest thing I've learned from GA, is to not be complacent, Michael, about the disrespect of money and disrespect of your character changes. They're the huge things that I've learned, and they make you feel good, when, especially when I'm there. Actually, when I'm in the meetings, I actually start shaking of how happy I am when I'm in there.
Yeah.
And if you consider that, considering where I was,
absolutely,
gambling $30,000 or more credit cards and whatever else, it's just out of control. It is insane. Yeah. Polar opposites, so...
Yeah, I guess if you can show your gratitude towards that, the difference in your life, then that's the way to, gratitude is an action. I show my gratitude by showing up and telling the other people, hey, this is possible for you too.
It is possible, and just every day is, there is one thing I would like to say, though, and I always remember this. One of my nana's friends used to say to me, yesterday's history, tomorrow's a mystery, and today's a gift. Just enjoy it.
Excellent. Well, we're going to finish on that. Great way to finish. So that's all the time we've got for today. And I'd like to thank Jason for coming into the 3CR studios and sharing his experience with Gamblers Anonymous and recovery. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. If you'd like to find out more about Gamblers Anonymous, then you can phone them on 96966108 or go online at gaaustralia.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.